Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts. We appreciate it. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think you are a hater. Coming up on this episode of The Right Time, we're talking about John Calipari, finesse god. How crazy these NBA playoffs are about to be, and the baseline. We're going to start a new serial series. We'll tell you about that, but first. All right. I want to start before I get into this other topic. You know, some of you guys may know this, but I'm on a television show on ESPN. It's called High Noon. It airs at 4 o'clock Eastern. It is me and my man, Pablo Torre. And, you know, yesterday was April Fool's Day. I got to tell you, I'm not like that big a fan of like pranks and the whole idea. This ain't like, you know what my problem is with pranks generally? And this doesn't really count. But the idea, and this how, you got to admit this, this is how a prank works. You decide that your laughs are so important that you are just going to not just make me an object of your laughing, but you gonna put me through some things in the course of it. I think we would all agree that there's a certain level of manipulation that comes from the prank world, and I'm not here for manipulation. You hadn't thought about it like that, Gabe Hatch.
I hadn't before, no.
Yeah, man, it's some real selfish privilege type stuff, and you just be out here deciding you gonna, we're going to laugh at you now. I don't know you. You know what I mean? Like, I don't engage in that. I ain't really gonna hit you with too much of a prank. Like, the most I'm gonna hit you with on a prank is like, there's a couple. You know what I mean? You know about both of them, right, Gabe?
Do tell.
You don't know about both of them?
I don't.
Both of these nuts!
Wow.
Yeah, that's a prank. That's the closest I get to pranks. I got Michael Smith with that on the set, by the way. Anyway, but we did one for April Fools. We had Will Kane on. In real life, I actually like Will. Will's very nice and very personal. He's very polite every time I see him around. You know, he just says a lot of things that I find to be objectionable. But, like, he's typically a nice dude when he hangs around here. And so we decided that we were going to do an April Fool's prank. And the way the prank worked was the TV show started on Monday. And the first person you saw, rather than me, was Will Kane. I heard a lot of y'all change the channel. But it was a very good prank. And then I got up and was like, hey, I got you. And Will then said, oh, wait, I'm not on the show. And then he got up and left. And he was like, well, next time you jerks have me on, it won't be a joke. And I said, the next time they have you on here will be the day that I quit. Guys, Will was in on it. Like, you really think that Will was just going to be sitting there on the set and then get jerked and not know that it was coming? And he's just going to be cool about it? Does he strike you as that sort of dude? Because I don't know him well enough to know the answer. But he don't strike me as that sort of dude. He was in on it. It was fun. It was good jokes. One thing I wanted to make sure that we did in that is that we weren't doing a skit. We were doing an April Fool's joke, right? So there has to be a moment of, ha-ha, April Fool's. Y'all must think I'm a lot more gangster than I really am. Y'all really think I'd do that to somebody? Is that what y'all saying about me? Or did y'all just want me to do that? I think it's B, Gabe.
Yeah, I think there's like a wishful thinking portion to that population there. Yes. And you fulfilled their dreams. There.
Something worth noting, by the way. Will says that he's starting to think that there's a little media bias that wanted it to be true. And I am not in a position to disagree. Are you?
I'm not either.
Guys, we have officially validated Will K saying that there's a media bias against him. Just a thought. Anyway, NCAA tournament. Zion gone. That was a great Elite Eight round of games. Like an absolutely great round of games for the Elite Eight. And who's left standing? A bunch of people y'all ain't never heard of. Is that a fair trade? Like, I personally don't find it ever to be a fair trade when we get Virginia. That's just me. Although that Virginia-Purdue game was rather excellent. It was a very, very good basketball game. I didn't want them to win, though. Like, I'm glad they gave us an excellent basketball game, but I can't expect them to give me two of them. Like, that's just asking too much out of them. That's not what they're here for. They're not trying to give us games that we want to watch. Then they won the other game. What was it, 53-48? No. We don't want that. And we lost Zion. Shout out to all you new Duke fans. Are you guys still Duke fans? You guys that are rooting for Duke this year and never rooted for Duke before, like, are you going to stick around with Duke or are you bailing just because Zion bailed? And I'm really asking this in the name of curiosity. I just want to know the thought process. I just want to know the mindset. I just want to know, what do you do from here once you've made that decision? Because a lot of y'all could have been like, I'm just rooting for Zion, but y'all went a step further. Y'all were like, nah, I want Duke to win. Y'all wanted Duke to win. Was your heart broke when they lost? How'd you feel when they caught that L? How'd you feel when R.J. Barrett did the full Carlton? Did it affect you in the way that it does now that your newfound fandom is there? Is that the first time that you realize you love them? Like, kind of like you be dating a girl sometime, the next thing you know, you don't hear from her for a day or two, and you be like, I almost really like her. Is that what happened to y'all? I just want to know what it is when y'all dropped in the roof of Duke. I could have told y'all, man, they wasn't going to win. In fact, I did tell y'all that they wasn't going to win this tournament. I did. My bracket don't say very much, but I'm pretty sure it said Michigan State over Duke in the Elite Eight. Listen to me now. Believe me later on. But now Zion gone. Like, it's a wrap on the College Zion. And you know what stinks about it being a wrap on the College Zion? It really didn't seem like until he came back from the injury that he truly realized what he was. Like, I don't think that he truly understood his powers until late. Like, we kind of got cheated in a way where I feel like we had about a good 15 games of people still being out here acting like RJ was that dude when it could have been Zion that was that dude. We could have got a lot more entertainment out of this. And then, of course, again, RJ went Carlton at the end of the game. And I almost feel bad about saying he went Carlton at the end of the game because he did get to the basket. He did draw a foul, you know, but Zion got to touch the ball there, right, Gabe?
Yes, and can you define going Carlton for me? Because when I think of going Carlton, I think of the gif where Carlton hurls the basketball at kind of an awkward yes. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar angle.
Yes.
And it just clink.
Yes, that's the gif that I'm... The gif.
Ooh, gif or gif?
It's gif.
Okay.
This has been settled. Don't be Pablo. It's gif.
I like gif.
Pablo be pronouncing stuff any old way, though. But yes, that is what I'm talking about. Do you remember that episode of The Fresh Prince?
Oh, do I ever.
Okay, just making sure. Yes, that's exactly what I'm talking about. That's kind of what it is, right? You know, RJ, I mean, granted, I don't think Carlton ever expected to be the star of the team, but Carlton was just on the team, and then next thing you know, Will showed up, and the offense needed to be to pass the ball to Will. The problem was, RJ thought he was Will. You know why RJ thought he was Will? Because he think he Kobe. That's why he thought he was Will. So anyway, then you get to that play at the end of the game and Carlton take the ball from Will and then throw it off the exit sign. That's what I'm talking about. He went Carlton. It was a partial Carlton. Like, it wasn't a full Carlton, but it was a Carlton. He did that. He didn't know. He wasn't Will. Sometimes you got to know who Will is. You ain't Will, RJ. You're not. And now Zion is out of the tournament and he was bananas. Like, that Carson Edwards dude that plays for Purdue and put up all those threes, wow, that was really impressive. He out here breaking Steph Curry records type stuff. That was cool. But the player of the tournament is Zion Williamson. I mean, there's just no way around that. I don't think it was really until the tournament. Like, I got that he was stronger than everybody else, but I didn't get that he was just, like, that much stronger than everybody else. Those crazy oops that he was catching. He's got an unattractive jump shot, but that jump shot was going in for the tournament. And I actually had to ask, like, in the course of that, I had to be like, hey, like, how was he not the number one overall recruit? You know, like, it was no shade to those guys, because I think the recruiting analysts get a bad rap. People out here are like, oh, you act like that stuff means anything. No, I mean, these cats trying to figure out what the hell an 18-year-old is going to be. Like, they mess up in every other part of college trying to do that, too. Like, it's not easy stuff. You know, they gave me some reasonable explanations as to why it is that people got it wrong on this. But it was giggling. Like, at first, I was like, okay, calm down. Let's see how it goes. Then, man, by the end of this tournament, I was just giggling watching the stuff that he was doing. How are you supposed to stop him if you're a college-sized guy? What are you supposed to do? Like, Abe, you got an older brother?
I do.
How much older?
Year and a half.
Okay, so it's not like my brother's 13 years older than me. And so every now and then when I was like little, they let me play ball with them. They were playing like 3-on-3 and stuff like that. You know, let me get in there. Just nice of them. They didn't have to do that. You know, let me pretend to be a basketball player. Give me shots I probably shouldn't get. You know, stuff like that. Zion, even in Division I, looked like, rather than the little brother playing with the big brother and all his friends, he looked like the big brother playing with the little brother and all their friends. You know, and like every play that he makes, It's not simply that the play is being made. It's kind of like when he blocks a shot. It's not like Zion's blocking a shot and like just getting a finger on it and, you know, just kind of redirecting the ball while it's in the air. He is beating somebody's shot. Like every time he blocked the shot, he beat it. Not just blocked it, he beat it. Whenever he's going up for a oop, like it never seems like he's catching it and just kind of bringing it down general. Like everything is done with such urgency and with such impact. I can't think of a player like that, like other than maybe Shaq. But Shaq was like 7'1". This dude is 6'7". And he's going home. Damn, Gabe, I feel like I should have been rooting for Duke. It'd be a little better if we still had him.
Has your excitement been drained completely from the Final Four?
I don't think I would go that far, but I got to say, like, I was excited about Zion, but I'm going to stay true with it. I don't root for nobody no more, just to be clear. But I was not at all excited about the prospect of Duke winning a national championship. Like, there was nothing attractive about that notion. I wouldn't give a damn Zion score 65 points in a championship game. I was never going to be hot. Like, think about this. All you guys who were like, y'all rooting for Duke now because of Zion. Did you want Zion to get a national championship so bad that you would ignore everybody else that would get it too? Because my mind operates in a different place. I'm not that myopic, you know? Like, good for the young man if he would have got it. But there's a whole lot of other people that I ain't really that fond of that have been a little bit too happy. No, that wasn't going to be it. On top of it, a lot of those people that was going to be a little bit too happy are people that when everybody else was operating, not everybody else, because wasn't everybody doing it on this level. But when they looked at Kentucky and these other schools that were playing on this one-and-done paradigm, and they talked about how they were doing it different and how they were so morally superior, and now all of a sudden they done seen the light, you was going to be happy for them if they won one. Now, we'll be back in a minute to talk about John Calipari in UCLA, but first, the average interest rate on credit card debt is over 18% APR. Whew, that's a lot. Have you looked at your interest rate lately? Refinance your high credit card balances and save with a credit card consolidation loan from LiveStream. Get a rate as low as 6.14 APR with AutoPay. The rate is fixed. It will never go up. You can get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000 and there are no fees. Even get your money as soon as the day you apply. When you have good credit, you deserve great service and a low interest fixed rate loan from LightStream. That's lending uncomplicated. Want to save even more? My listeners get an additional interest rate discount. The only way to get this discount is to go to LightStream.com/Bomani. LightStream.com/Bomani. Subject to credit approval, rate includes 0.50% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit LightStream.com/Bomani for more information. Kentucky did not make the Final Four this year. There are a lot of Kentucky fans who are unhappy about the fact that they did not make the Final Four, as they have not made the Final Four since 2015. This is a time where you might want to remind people that they went to the Final Four in 2011. That was Calipari's second year at Kentucky. They had not been to a Final Four before that since 1998. They made four Final Fours in 5 years after that happened, though it's worth noting the year that they did not make the Final Four. They not only did not make the tournament, they did not make it to the second round of the NIT. I believe they lost to Robert Morris in that year. But yeah, some Kentucky fans, not too happy. I just want to point out for you, Cal has been to seven Elite Eights and four Final Fours in 10 years at Kentucky. That is basically Jim Boeheim's entire career at Syracuse. That is basically what Mike Krzyzewski has done since 2001 at Duke. Of course, the difference is Krzyzewski's got some titles thrown in there. Not an insignificant thing, but you get where I'm coming from. He's done pretty well. He's done pretty well for himself, but this finesse move that he made. So UCLA tried to hire Cal. And Kentucky, interestingly, gave UCLA permission to talk to him. I believe they may as well have given UCLA permission to talk to him because he wasn't going to leave. Their last coach was Steve Alford. right? Like, if they was playing on a level that they was going to hire Cal, Steve Alford wouldn't have been the dude that they had last time. There's all kinds of questions about just how much UCLA has money for. And a big part of it is, does UCLA have money to pay assistants? I talked to somebody who swears to me that they got the money to make these things work. If they need to get it done, they can get it done. But the widespread belief is that the problem with UCLA is they can kind of sort of pay the coach, but they really can't pay for the stuff that is surrounding it, which I find to be incredibly bizarre that they don't have a money network that can do this. But whatever, right? That's where UCLA is. UCLA made a play at Cal. Gave what they offered him, like $9 million?
I want to say it was around $8 million.
Yeah, and Cal told them no. And now he has a lifetime contract at Kentucky. Lifetime. He finessed that deal using as leverage a job he was never going to take. Under no circumstance was he going to leave Kentucky to go to UCLA. Nobody is going to leave a job like Kentucky unless they have to go to what is a lesser job. Like, I will never understand it, how it is. And I guess these athletic departments do that just to, like, scratch these guys behind the ears and make them feel better. Because in truth, a lifetime contract for Cal is no different than any contract that he is ever going to have. If they want to get him up out the paint, they can get him up out the paint. If he wants to remove himself from the paint, his own paint removal will transpire. There's no point. Like, this is the job for him as long as he wants to have the job. And if he doesn't want to have the job, he'll be able to get out of it. If they want him to get out of there, he's there as long as he wants to be there, vice versa. But they, I mean, he's there. That's not what it is. I guess these programs just feel like that, though. Like, it's just like, we got to do something to let this guy know that we are appreciating you. You are good for us. We like you, Cal. Man, they know that. They do. They do. But these cats stay finessing more out of these coaching contracts without a single bit of actual, real, live, legitimate leverage. They never wind up being in a fight. See, I think that's the thing that makes, like, coach hire stuff interesting in college and in a way that's different than anywhere else, is that you never really hear about negotiations being adversarial. Like, have you ever heard of a situation where a successful college coach was in a fight about his extension? Because that stuff does happen in the NFL. But have you ever really had, like, a contract dispute between a guy who had a job with a college and the university? I can't think of a single time. All they do to avoid the fight, they just stay giving them the money. Like, it is a fascinating illustration of the power dynamics that a coach has, that never at any point does the program push back at them about money. Never. Like, I seen some magic tricks. I remember the time Butch Davis, when he first got the job in North Carolina coaching football, the year before he got there, they won 3 games. His first year, they won 4 games. The Arkansas job came open. Butch is from Arkansas. He got himself, I want to say, a $400,000 raise. He got himself a $400,000 raise for turning 3 wins into 4. 3 wins into 4. He got a $400,000 raise because he was going to go to Arkansas. Let him go. They'll never dare these cats to go. They ain't never do. They'll be like, psh, all right, then, your call. They'll never do that. Only time they wind up doing that is when they swear they just ain't got enough money. But I can't think of too many times where they just stand up and be like, no, we're not going to pay that. How about you get it your damn self? They never do. And that's what Cal pulled off here. His job is interesting because, like, Kentucky is kind of like Alabama football. Although, and this is serious. Like, this should tell you how serious Alabama football is. I can say right now, I actually want to say that Alabama football is more serious than Kentucky basketball. And that is, if Saban did the football equivalent and not go to the Final Four for 4 years, Saban would be fired. I'm not exaggerating. Saban would be fired under those circumstances. Basketball's got a single elimination tournament, man. Like, weird and wild things happen all the time in a single elimination tournament. And great coaches have these crazy runs where they don't go to Final Fours. Dean Smith did not go to a Final Four between 1982 and 1991. Now, that said, they went to the Sweet 16 every year from 1981 to 1993, which is a bananas stat when you think about it. But no, you had that long stretch where they did not go. 2010 to 2015. Is that the, no, 04 to 10 is like the longest stretch for Kay, but Kay went 04 to 10, 10 to 15, 15 to question mark, question mark, question mark. Roy Williams went from 93 to 02 without going to the Final Four. I mean, it's not easy. It is a difficult thing to pull off. And I could imagine that it would get really annoying dealing with people who don't understand that. I mean, that's part of the life of being a coach at Kentucky. But that ain't going to get fixed when you go to UCLA, right? Like, the only way that Cal could make this work is if he could find some place where he would go where it could be maybe an escape from all that stuff, except the places that are escapes from all that stuff aren't the places that are as big time as where he is. He ain't trying to give away the big time. I think the only job he would have really thought about taking was when the Cavs were open in 2014, he would have had a chance to coach LeBron, except it would have been a disaster because Cal is not built for the NBA. You lose too many games in the NBA. Like, you got to be able to take stuff in stride, you know? Like, what is a decent NBA record is a record that'll get you fired in college. He ain't built for that. But Finesse God, good for him. Get you a little bit more money. I guess I don't be feeling bad about Cal getting money because Cal wants the players to get money. And I don't feel like if Cal sees a player getting money, he gonna slap it out his hand. See how the universe come through for people like that? You ain't thought about it like that, had you? All right, we'll be back in a minute to talk about the NBA playoffs. But first, hiring used to be hard. Multiple job sites, stacks of resumes, confusing review process. But today, hiring can be easy. You only have to go to one place to get it done. ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. ZipRecruiter sends your job to over 100 of the web's leading job boards, but they don't stop there. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply to your job. As applications come in, ZipRecruiter analyzes each one and spotlights the top candidates so you never miss a great match. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 80% of employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. Right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. That's ZipRecruiter.com/BOMANI. ZipRecruiter.com/Bomani. That's ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. All right, man, so I got a thought for y'all, and I don't know if I can think of a year that's quite like this. I know that most of you guys have penciled the Warriors in as champions, and I can understand why you would do that, but I think that a part of the reason why people are so quickly penciled the Warriors in as champions, because you can't think of anybody else that you think will be a champion. So you wind up saying the Warriors because it's like the easy default answer, and I understand that. But I feel like I don't really have any idea who's going to win a championship this year. I certainly have no idea who is going to win the East. And it has been like 7-8 years since we had no idea who was going to win the East. The championship, the title game itself, I feel like is more wide open than it's been since what, maybe LeBron's first year in Miami. Like, I don't think any of us have a great handle on what the playoffs are going to be. And that's kind of cool, right? Because the NBA has the most predictable of postseasons, and it's because of the nature of basketball and a 7-game series. I generally, you know, barring major injuries or stuff like that, the winner of a 7-game series in basketball is the better team. Right. There's not a lot of flukes. There's not a lot of like, how in the world did that happen? If you win a 7-game series in basketball, you are the better team. And what makes for randomization in the tournament, obviously, just from there, is that the better team might not necessarily win. That's part of the charm of the NCAA tournament until the not better teams win too much. And then you look up and you're like, damn, I don't know who none of these people are. Like, you don't want it to get all willy nilly and out of hand. Like, you remember last year, like, Sister Jean was cool, but she wasn't the one that was out there playing basketball. I wanted them dudes out to paint so bad. No disrespect. Them cats going to be walking around with their Final Four t-shirts on until they're 75 years old. Like, you may not know this, but I played in the Final Four. But basketball, the better team's going to win. I don't know who the better team is on so many levels and in so many series. Like, would you be surprised, as good as Denver's been, but Denver's also has, like, logged up a bunch of injuries. Would you be surprised if the Nuggets lost in the first round?
I wouldn't.
Like, if they caught the Thunder, for example, the Thunder got to the 7th slot, would you be surprised? Because I wouldn't.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's been hyping up the Thunder as kind of like the team that could make a run at the Warriors around the All-Star break. But, like, Florida James sent us some notes And the Thunder have had like one of the worst records in the NBA post All-Star break.
Yeah, somehow they were better when Russell Westbrook was playing worse. Like, I don't really understand how that works. But they have ingredients that would make you think that they have a chance to beat the Warriors. I thought that they were going to wind up being like the 3 seed in the West. Now it looks like they're going to be down there around the 8 in the West. Do you know if the Clippers are good? Like, I hear they're going to the playoffs.
I don't watch the Clippers, number one, out of spite. But number two, out of I'm just not all that interested in what the Clippers have got going on and their like America's teamness. People seem to be thinking the world of them and that they could sneak up on somebody. So like depending on how the matchups shake out, like your idea about the Nuggets getting bounced, I mean, it could be the Clippers.
I don't remember who plays for them. Like Lou Williams plays for them, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, put some respect on my man Lou Will's name.
Lou Williams plays for them. What's his name? Patrick Beverly.
Yeah, that's two.
Gallo.
Yeah, three. Okay. Shea Gilgeous.
Oh,
Alexander.
SGA.
Yeah,
SGA.
Yeah.
Okay. Give me a fifth. They got to play. Got
Landry Shamet.
Oh, I didn't know that's where he played.
Oh yeah, dude, he was like a throw-in in that Tobias Harris deal.
Oh, that's
right. But he's
right.
It's turned out really well for the Clippers.
Good for him. Are you out of people?
Montrezl Harrell.
Oh, yeah. I'm familiar with his work.
Still in the league.
Doc, remember when he was out here wondering if Doc could coach?
And now people are talking about him being coach of the year.
I wonder if Doc is turning into the new Lenny Wilkins, right? Where Lenny Wilkins, I give him 5 dudes off the street, and they'll win 50 games. I could give him the 83 Sixers, and they win 50 games. Maybe that's what Doc has evolved into. You know, because he got a championship. You know, he had his little run. Maybe that's what he's evolved into. I have no idea. But this is going to be fun. And Gabe, it's going to be miserable because I don't know what kind of playoff watcher you are, but I try to watch as many of the West Coast games as I can. And that means it's like those first 3 weeks or so of the playoffs, like especially before we start getting eliminating people. Oh my God, it's so miserable because I'm so sleepy.
That was the word I was going to use to describe it. Miserable. I am miserable in that month of time.
I think the only thing that's good is the basketball.
Yes.
Everything else is awful. It's every night. But like the East, you got any idea how that's going to go? Especially with Milwaukee with all those injuries?
Well, if they are able to get Malcolm Brogdon back, that could do something for the Bucks, I think.
But they got another, what, 4 to 6 weeks on that?
Yeah.
Playoffs starting, what, like 3 weeks?
So, I mean, if they can get through their first round matchup, get them back to the second round.
Yeah, and I think they can. By the way, Malcolm Brogdon, sneaky 50-40-90 guy. Did you know that?
I had him on my fantasy team, so
oh,
I did.
You're very aware of these things. It didn't mess up your situation when he got hurt, did it?
It killed my situation. I was in the playoffs, and I was like, oh, there goes my my playoff run. There goes the pot of money for this year. Fun. Cool. Thanks, Malcolm.
Damn. Yes, that you're welcome, he says, for getting plantar fasciitis. He was thinking about you the whole time. He didn't want to let down the team. And by the team, I mean your team.
Yeah, team laugh track.
Yes. I'm looking. The Celtics are going to be hilarious, right? If nothing else. Either they're going to be really good or it's going to be hilarious.
I mean, purely out of spite, I do hope they get bounced in the first round.
Wow, you hate the Celtics like that?
Well, I'm just interested in seeing disarray and chaos when it comes to Boston sports teams, and namely the Celtics. So if it ends up being that they get bounced in the first round, is there not going to be chaos and panic in Boston?
Oh, yeah, here for it. Great job. Be great for business.
Yes.
Be amazing for business. Yeah. How about a first round sweep?
Whew. Where's Kyrie going next?
The Sixers in the first round.
I'm here for a matchup between the Celtics and the Sixers.
Except
sure.
The problem is they got the Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid kryptonite. What do we have to do to get what could be perhaps the most pleasant thing that we could get from the playoffs, or most messy thing, which is, which one they got? Marcus?
Marcus Morris?
Yeah. Marcus Morris and Marcus Smart fighting in the locker room. You can see it.
That's your ideal scenario?
I mean, you can see it, right?
Oh, I can see it. I was going to ask what your ideal scenario is in terms of the Eastern Finals. Who do you want in that matchup? And then also, who do you want to advance to the finals in terms of what you think is going to be the best viewing property?
I think I want what the league doesn't want. Raptors Bucks.
You don't think the league wants that?
Oh no.
What do they want? What do you think? Do you want?
They don't want one of the smallest markets in the league versus the market that's not in the United States.
That is a fair point. Very fair point.
Those are, let me tell you, the Bucks and the Raptors have something in common, which is they both play a lot of playoff games on NBA TV. They are the NBA TV All-Stars. And maybe it'll be different in that Oklahoma City, for example, like especially that Westbrook triple-double, I remember seeing the numbers. They were a big national television draw. Like that brand had become enough that people watched them. I don't know how long it'll take before you get to that place with the Bucks. Like I feel like they didn't have a problem putting the Raptors when Vince Carter was there on big time television stuff. But as of right now, where they got old Kawhi and Kyle Lowry is the man. And well, Siakam ain't moving the needle. He good though, but he's not moving the needle in that way. The NBA does not want Raptors Bucks as they sell television games, but I do. I think it could be cool. I would enjoy honestly any combination of Raptors Bucks and Sixers. I'm here for. I think the East semifinals are going to be dope, and I have no idea what's going to happen in the West. Like Portland, what am I supposed to expect from Portland?
Can't really expect much when it comes to the playoffs when it's Portland.
Mm-mm. I don't know what to expect from the Jazz. Like, what should I think that they're going to bring out here? I have no idea. Now, the Rockets. I mean, I think it will be probably Warriors-Rockets in the Western Conference Finals, but I think that's a lot tighter than people are giving it credit for being. Like, I think that's probably a seven-game series. I'm kind of rooting for the Rockets. A little bit. Speaking of fighting in the locker room, how do we get the Warriors to do that?
Got to be an early exit.
Hey, how do we get Draymond Green to put his finger in Kevin Durant's face on the bench? Do we need him to be like down 2-1 and down 5 with a minute left?
It's got to be a specific matchup, too. Like, I don't think if we're going to be here for them fighting, I don't think it's going to be like being down 2-1 to the Jazz or being down 2-1. It's got to be versus the Thunder.
Yes.
Or the Rockets. Because if it's against the Thunder, you're going to have a whole lot of finger wagging and dancing from Russ, trying to get in their heads. And then if it's going to be against the Rockets, it's going to be like, yeah, you got us last year, but got you now.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Why are we so messy?
I think we're just both spiteful.
I'm just messy. Like, I don't even want bad things to happen to anybody as much as I want good things to happen for our podcast. Messy is better for business. All right, we'll be back in a minute to start our podcast series Baseline. But first, the average interest rate on credit card debt is over 18% APR. Whew, that's a lot. Have you looked at your interest rate lately? Refinance your high credit card balances and save with a credit card consolidation loan from LightStream. Get a rate as low as 6.14 APR with AutoPay. The rate is fixed. It will never go up. You can get a loan from $5,000 to $100,000 and there are no fees. Even get your money as soon as the day you apply. When you have good credit, you deserve great service and a low interest fixed rate loan from LightStream. That's lending uncomplicated. Want to save even more? My listeners get an additional interest rate discount. The only way to get this discount is to go to LightStream.com/Bomani. LightStream.com/Bomani. Subject to credit approval, rate includes 0.50% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit LightStream.com/Bomani for more information. Gonna try something out now for you guys. We have a series that we are going to run over the course of the next few weeks. The series is called Baseline, by the way, and the topic this time is the Supermax extension in the NBA. And so that's one of those things that you hear people talk about a lot, but I don't know if people fully understand how the Supermax works. It's had a lot of effects in the direction that it has taken the league. So we're going to talk to a lot of people about it. Next week, we are going to talk to Michelle Roberts, the head of the NBA Players Association, about the topic of the Supermax contract and what it's done, how good it's been, how good it maybe it has not been. We're going to talk to a current agent. We're going to talk to a former general manager. But our first guest on this is ESPN NBA analyst and the host of Brian Windhorst and the Hoop Collective. His name is Brian Windhorst. All right, Brian, we're talking about the Supermax deal, and I think people have a general idea of what it is, but can you just give me a quick explanation about what the Supermax deal is in the NBA?
Yeah, so basically it's a de facto franchise tag. And one of the things that we've seen in the NBA is when these star players have been changing teams, it's usually after their second contract or after their first max contract. LeBron did that. Chris Bosh did that. Dwight Howard did that. The guy who triggered it to make this all happen was, obviously Kevin Durant. He did that. And so basically what the Supermax is for those guys who have 7 to 10 years of experience, it flicks up their paycheck to a 10-year experience player. So it basically works like this. If you're a guy who's got 4 years experience, you're getting your first max contract, you can get 25% of the salary cap. And right now the salary cap is about $100 million, so it's easy math, so it's about $25 million. If you're a 7 year experience player, you can get 30% of the salary cap, so about $30 million to start right now. And then if you're a 10-year player, you can get 35%. So it's a difference of about $5 million a year over the 5 years of the contract. So right off the bat, it's, you know, $25 million minimum. And then obviously it's going to go up from there with raises. So that's how you get, guys who, you know, who get the Supermax can get tens and tens of millions more. So basically it's a way to super duper reward the players who have 7 years at least of experience to try to get them to stay put, because that's the time when these players were leaving. And it's, you know, if the owners had their druthers, they would have had a franchise tag, just like in football, that you could slap on a player and he couldn't leave in free agency unless there were extreme circumstances. The union said no to that, so their way to buy their way out of it was, let's just give them so much money that they don't even think about leaving.
But then the flip side is, they still think about leaving, or at least it appears to be the case.
Right, so it's only been partially successful. We have seen instances where it has worked. Russell Westbrook, James Harden, Steph Curry, those guys did take the money. But obviously a lot of situations where it hasn't. Kyrie Irving said, I don't care about it. Paul George said, I don't care about it. And it's also gone, Kawhi Leonard said, I don't care about it, trade me. And it's also gone the other way. The Sacramento Kings, as an example, were afraid that DeMarcus Cousins would only want the Supermax, didn't think that he could, didn't think it was worth it. So they traded him. He didn't want to be traded, but they traded him. And it's important to point out that, you don't get the Supermax if you're traded. So if you ask for a trade, you're basically voiding the chance at getting those tens of millions extra. And that is exactly what, as an example, Kawhi Leonard did last year and what Anthony Davis is prepared to do when he asked for a trade away from the Pelicans.
Well, how do the owners feel about this? Because they want to keep these guys and they figured, hey, we give them the money, they'll stay, except we've seen these high profile cases where they haven't.
Well, I guess it's never going to be a foolproof situation, but this has backfired in a way that the owners didn't expect it. And the in addition to giving the players the extra money, the Supermax, one of the things that they did to the rule was they enabled players to extend their contract in the middle of their deal. So this is exactly what happened with Russell Westbrook and James Harden, and John Wall is another example of this. All those guys had multiple years left on their contract, but when they became eligible for the Supermax, the teams rushed in and offered them extensions, even though they had, you know, they were in the middle of their deals, and they all took them. Those guys took them. The problem is that, because these extension deadlines started happening before they were free agents, you know, for example, let's just say, let's use, Anthony Davis as a perfect example of this. Anthony Davis isn't a free agent until 2020. But because he's extension eligible for the Supermax in 2019, all of a sudden, the pressure on whether he was committing to the franchise got advanced by a year. And the reason the owners put that in was to say, not only are we going to give these guys a whole bunch of money, But we're going to make sure they don't even get to free agency and even can be wooed by building a super team or whatever. So we're going to put this big pile of money on the table, and we're going to put the big pile of the money on the table 1 or 2 years in advance so that there's no pressure, that we're fine. And it's backfired, because what's happened is, instead of the players waiting to become free agents, when the extension moment happens, they've been able to basically give their referendum on the franchise. And so instead of not worrying about Anthony Davis until, 2020 or at least into the 1920 season, they had to worry about Anthony Davis a year and a half before his free agency. And we're going to see this happen again. Giannis Antetokounmpo has 2 years left on his contract, next summer. He'll have 2 years left. But he's going to have this deadline rushing at him about signing the extension. Damian Lillard this summer, he has 2 years left on his contract. But if he doesn't sign that extension, the sweat beads are going to start popping out. So in some ways, it's rushed free agency at the teams. And even Adam Silver has admitted that this is an unintended consequence of this rule that they thought was going to keep free agents in place.
But it also seems interesting that they thought that this would be the way to go, because I think if there was any lesson to learn from the summer of 2010 with LeBron and those guys is, no, these guys will walk away for money.
Yeah, I think there's a couple lessons on it. I mean, one is that the money has gotten so high now, and I think Paul George has articulated this when he walked away from money with the Pacers, that the money has gotten so high now that it's not like if you walk away and go where you want to go, you're going to be broke. Players are still signing, max players with 7 years experience, this summer, could walk away from their teams. Let me give you an example. Kemba Walker, for example, he could walk away from the Hornets and go sign with the Lakers and still get almost $150 million. So saying that he is making a terrible financial decision when he could be guaranteeing himself that doesn't have the same teeth. But Bomani, there's also been a secondary fall off, and I'll go all the way back to 1999, when they had the lockout that cost half of that season and led to the establishment of the max contract. At the time, David Falk, who was Michael Jordan's agent, he was very opposed to the max contract, and what he said was, if you say that each team has a maximum player contract, you're going to have 30, or I think it was 28 teams at that time. You're going to have 30, you're going to have 28 teams with 28 players who think that they're max players. Every single, player is going to, the best player in every team is going to think that he's worth the max. And to a certain extent, I think David Falk proved to be right, because you had situations out there like, Andre Kirilenko with Utah. Andre Kirilenko was a fine player, a quality player. But for Utah, they had to give him a max contract because he wanted it, and they was like, well, he's our best player, we have to give him the max. So this is what's happened with the Supermax now too. If you get a player who's really good, who's your franchise player, and he hits the Supermax qualification, you feel an immense pressure to give him that money. A good example, coming up this year possibly could be Bradley Beal. Bradley Beal, due to some injuries to some guards in the league and some other factors, could edge his way onto the All-NBA team and make himself Supermax eligible and be in position to sign a $200 million extension this summer. You wouldn't look at Bradley Beal and think that he's in the same league as Kevin Durant or Kawhi Leonard or Paul George. He's a good player. He's been an all-star at different times in his career, but he is about to get the same contract as those guys. And once you commit to a Supermax, it really impacts what you can do with the rest of your team. And so, for example, one of the reasons why Bradley Beal may get the Supermax is because his own teammate John Wall got hurt. If John Wall was 100% healthy and playing at his best level, he might be all NBA. Instead, he vacates a spot. Bradley Beal may move into it, and the Washington Wizards may end up with two Supermax contracts on a team that has basically been an average, back-end playoff team. And that is the scenario that you get when you make the rules like this.
Well, that was the other thing I was going to say, is that given the always bizarre relationship between Wall and Beal, you couldn't give that Supermax to Wall and then not give it to Beal.
Exactly. And so, the Kemba Walker is another example. if Kemba Walker gets on the All-NBA team, and you know, he is definitely would have earned it, he is now in position to ask the Hornets for a 5-year, $220 million contract. And I like Kemba Walker. I think he's incredible to watch. At the end of games, he has moments where he is, you know, goes white hot with talent. He's a guy you want to have on your roster. Your fans love him. He's never been a part of a winning playoff series. And yet he may earn his way to the point of asking for $220 million. And again, LeBron James, Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, those guys, you're like, I want to give him that 220. Kemba Walker, I don't think it's in the same league, but because there's a max contract defined, in other words, the Golden State Warriors can't say, you know, Kevin Durant, you are worth $50 million to us, whereas the Hornets would say, you know, you're not worth $50 million to us, Kemba. You may be worth 30, but you're not worth 50. But because there's a standardized max, a whole bunch of players get grouped into that. And that was what David Falk, amongst other people, was saying was a flaw with a max contract. And, you know, you can make the argument though, Bomani, that if there wasn't a max contract, owners and teams would make similar mistakes overpaying their best player. But because it's a standardized level, you sort of have inequality amongst that level.
Well, it's also kind of an irony that the players, one could argue, most worthy of those supermax extensions are the ones who have enough money that they're willing to walk away, which means that the guys who you maybe don't want to give it to, they snap that thing up so fast, it's crazy.
Exactly. And I really do think, though, in all honesty, from an economic standpoint, there's probably only a few players that, you know, that their accountants would be okay with them saying no to a supermax. You know, LeBron James has, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars in endorsements. Kevin Durant, hundreds of millions of dollars in endorsements. Steph Curry is around that level. You know, Paul George or Kawhi Leonard opting out of the supermax and potentially costing themselves $70 million. I'm not so sure that from a balance sheet standpoint that they're ever going to make that money up. But those guys obviously felt that having freedom and having flexibility had value to them. And, you know, it is obviously easier to say no to that when you're still, you know, pretty indemnified against everything. But, Paul George someday will feel the loss of that money, but the intangibles, he has made it clear that have outweighed the loss of that cash.
I also think that there's an argument that could be made that this could be a good thing for the league just because it should incentivize and force franchises to like create places that guys actually want to stay in.
Yeah, I think you could make that argument amongst all teams and all leagues. I do think one of the things that, you know, the Oklahoma City Thunder have constantly been a tip of the spear for the way the NBA has tried to control star players. So, you know, when the Heat were formed in 2010, the NBA put in a very much harsh luxury tax to try to break up super teams. And the first team that it affected was the Thunder, because they had to trade James Harden because they didn't think they could afford the luxury tax on Harden, Westbrook, and Durant. Now, obviously that trade has been analyzed ad nauseum. In the moment in 2011, that was the decision that they made. They make the adjustment, you know, then Durant walks, and then they make another adjustment to try to basically hold superstars in place, and they immediately give the contract to Russell Westbrook where it works. So it's just, you know, they kept Westbrook because of the fallout from Durant, just like they lost Harden because of the fallout from the Heat being formed. So they've sort of been at the tip of the spear. And what I would say is you look at the Oklahoma City Thunder, they are in the bottom five markets in size. They have two superstar players on their team, and they've been able to retain both of them. So yes, they lost Durant and they lost Harden, but they have Paul George and Russell Westbrook, and they're paying them. They're paying them a lot of money, and they're probably losing money as a franchise. In fact, I'm certain they're losing money as a franchise. But you could argue that they have been an incredible test case, and you know they've been able to maintain their stars now, and that this CBA that went into place enabled them to make that happen.
Now, should we be surprised that they're losing money?
No, I mean, generally the way the NBA operates, it's a very socialistic system. even though it's, you know, maybe the pinnacle of capitalism, it's very socialistic. The 5 to 7 teams that are heavily profitable really fund the 7 to 10 teams that really lose money. You know, the Charlotte Hornets, for example, receive about $30 million a year from their partners. The Memphis Grizzlies, about the same. Teams like the Lakers and the Warriors are paying, in excess of $40 million a year into that pool. And so, yeah, it would be nice if, everybody pulled their own weight and everybody, was sustainable, but that's not the case. In a 30-team league, the richest teams are going to have to partially fund the smallest markets. And look, the Los Angeles Lakers play the Utah Jazz 4 times a year, put those games on television, and reap the rewards with their $175 million a year local TV contract. It's part of the deal. There's always going to be revenue equality if you want to have a league that has any sort of, you know, diversity in terms of markets.
Now, last thing for you, just looking forward to the summer. I don't know if it's possible to top what the summer of 2010 was for free agency, but this has got to be the biggest one since, right?
Right. Well, so we have a whole bunch of stars out there. And not only do we have a whole bunch of stars, we have big slash glamour markets with space. So you obviously have both LA teams, both New York teams. Dallas is sitting there with space. And then you have the Anthony Davis trade scenario, which is sort of quasi free agency. Boston doesn't have space, but has a major free agent in Kyrie Irving, plus the possibility of trading for Anthony Davis. And then you have the extra fuel, which is two players, I believe, coming in via the draft that potentially you could trade for a whole bunch of a great player or two, including Anthony Davis. You know, some team that gets the number one or number two pick is going to be getting a phone call from the Pelicans with the opportunity to trade for a top 5 to 7 player. And so you combine all of that, and you have a powder keg. And not only that, I think this is an important fact. All of the top free agents have rings. Klay Thompson, who I don't think is going anywhere, but I think merits mention. Kevin Durant, Kawhi Leonard, Kyrie Irving. That gives them a freedom to do some things that otherwise in other years free agents who are chasing titles and respectability don't necessarily have. And so I think it makes it incredibly high stakes and also, Balmani, incredibly unpredictable.
Got to say, it was very nice of you to include Dallas in that.
Well, you know what? You say that, but what if Dallas moves to like 1 or 2 in the lottery?
Ah.
They have Doncic, they have Porzingis, they possibly have John Morant or Zion Williamson, and they have max space. If I'm Kawhi Leonard, I'm taking that phone call.
You swayed me.
You know?
I was like, you did sway me. Although Mark Cuban, he has struggled to sway people lately. We'll see how this goes. That is Brian Windhorst. Check him out, NBA ESPN analyst. Also check out his podcast, Brian Windhorst and the Hoop Collective. I appreciate it, Matt.
Thanks, Bamani.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing here a couple times a week. My man Gabe Bassain handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Also, thanks to our sponsors, ZipRecruiter and Lightstream. Also, thanks to Brian Windhorst of ESPN and the Hoop Collective podcast for joining us on the first edition of Baseline, the Supermax. Check out next week with Michelle Roberts. Don't forget to check out the Mina Kimes Show featuring Lenny. It's NFL Draft Month. What a difference a year makes. Last year, Mina wasn't a big fan of Josh Allen, but now she loves him. Kinda. She'll be talking to my man Spencer Hall of SB Nation at EDSBS.com. Also, remember, rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to think you are a hater, and we'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.
The Right Time with Bomani Jones is presented by Goodyear. Discover the possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.